Good morning, friends. I'm going to read a little bit from the middle of the 12th chapter of Romans, and that's on page 226 in the New Testament section of the Pew Bibles, if you want to read along. In the bulletin, it says verses 9 through 15, but I'm actually going to read verses 9 to 18. So here are Paul's words to the church in Rome, verses 9 through 18 of chapter 12. Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in brotherly and sisterly love. Give preference to one another in honor, not lagging behind in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Rejoicing in hope, persevering in tribulation, devoted to prayer, contributing to the needs of the saints, practicing hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice, and weep with those who weep. Be of the same mind toward one another. Do not be haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own estimation. Never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Respect what is right in the sight of all people. If possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all people. With that, we will let the children go downstairs who want to be dismissed. On Thursday, I sent a message to a lot of you regarding the urgency of the moment. What is going on just now, even this very hour here in Berkeley? And as I said in my message, I felt conflicted getting ready for this weekend between the urgency of the moment out there and all that needs to be done here, knowing especially that I needed to be here for worship on our second to last Sunday with you. And so there was that conflict that I felt. But then I received a message late in the week that there was a group planning a prayer gathering at Civic Center Park on Saturday afternoon, yesterday afternoon. And so I took notice. Here was an opportunity to be part of a public gathering in the same space as the planned alt-right rally the day before. And the organizers said that one of the things they intended to do was to seed the ground with prayer, perhaps to preempt the potential for violence and hatred with appeals to God for peace with justice. So I went. And if you are in the same grapevine that I am, or the same similar grapevines, there are lots of them, you know that this was a gathering that was organized by the Network for Spiritual Progressives and Beit Tikkun Synagogue, which is Rabbi Michael Lerner's group. And so this was an interfaith crowd. It was mostly Jews from Beit Tikkun. And to the extent there was an order of worship, it drew on Beit Tikkun's songs and prayers, although it was mostly oratory. But there were Christians from several churches as well, the City of Refuge Church of Christ in Oakland, St. John's Presbyterian, Allen Temple Baptist. And those of you who know the Network for Spiritual Progressives or Tikkun Magazine or Rabbi Lerner, you've probably heard the themes that he touched on when he spoke. A transformation in the strategy of the left in the U.S. so that the left, I'm not going to say we because I'm not going to assume everybody here identifies with the left, but the left can be able to clearly state not just what they're against but also what they're for. That's one of the things I really appreciate about his thinking. And then that the ultimate goal is a caring society with a new bottom line for everyone, where the bottom line is not determined by profit or by financial worth, but by human benefit. So Rabbi Lerner and a lot of other people spoke, and there were some inspiring words, and there were inspiring prayers. One of the things that I noticed was that there were new signs up all over the place. Maybe you've seen them because they've just sort of sprouted up in the last couple of days. Berkeley stands united against hate. Have you seen these signs? It's kind of a dark background with purple and orange letters. This turns out this was the mayor's idea. The mayor had a bunch of these signs printed up, posted all around downtown, and many people at the gathering had one. And I guess they've already run out. They didn't really print enough. It's rare that a city government will spend the money to make a statement like this, and I think they're actually trying to recoup their costs. They're, you know, doing a Kickstarter or something so that they can get some of the money back. So I thought that was interesting, that the city government would choose to make this statement. But then there's the question, and especially in a place like Berkeley, is does the government have the right to make a statement on my behalf about standing for anything, right? And as I was thinking about that statement, I thought of the first verse of this passage. Paul writes, "Abhor what is evil." And that led me to ask, what does it mean to abhor evil? Some translations have this, "hate what is evil," rather than abhor. So my question, is any kind of hate okay? Can we unite with the rest of Berkeley against hate and still hate what is evil? So a couple things about this particular part of the passage. This verb, which is translated abhor in our Pew Bibles, but in other translations is hate, only appears here in the New Testament. This is a unique word in the New Testament vocabulary. So it's not the word used elsewhere for garden variety hate, if there is such a thing, but for the more common words that are used for hate. And abhor or abhorrence is really more apt because that word in English has the same root as horror. So abhorrence is not just enmity, it's not just hate, it's horror in reaction to something. It's that almost visceral reaction when we see something or hear something that is evil and our soul reacts against it. That's abhorrence. And then also cling to what is good. You notice Paul doesn't just say abhor what is evil, but cling to what is good. We get the sense of deep attachment. These are not intellectual calculations or estimations. This is something that goes deeper than that. Abhor evil and cling to what is good. The other important thing to notice here is that Paul does not say hate those who are evil. He simply says, hate what, or hate that which is evil. So we are to abhor, to turn away from, to shrink back from, to have nothing to do with that which is evil, first in ourselves, and then in others, and then in the systems of the world, for there is evil in each of those places. But we are not to abhor anyone. This is clear from the rest of the passage, which is why I extended what we had in the bulletin. Do not repay evil for evil. So far as it depends on you, be at peace with everyone. So to abhor evil is not to demonize others, as some of the people who have said they will be at Civic Center Park clearly do, but to shrink from anything that defies God, anything in ourselves, in others, or in the systems of the world that works against God, and instead seek to love. So with that understanding, I think we can say that we stand against hate. Not hate of others, not hate of anyone, but we do seek to shrink from what is evil, and to love and to be at peace with everyone as best we can. Now, as usual, there's a lot of other things, really important things in this passage, a lot of really beautiful things that we could spend hours upon, but there's just one other part of it that I want to talk about for the rest of our time. Well, mostly, which is verse 15. Rejoice with those who rejoice, and weep with those who weep. As I've been thinking about my time with you, our time with you, over the past 9 years, not eight, nine, this is the verse that came to mind. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. It has been my privilege to do this, for these 9 years, walking alongside you, rejoicing in your joy and weeping in your sadness, rejoicing in the birth of four babies and the deaths of five members and many more friends and family members who passed on, and countless many other life events, the more mundane stuff, but the stuff that is still joyous and is all the more joyous because there's a lot more of it. Baby teeth wiggling and then coming out. Birthday cakes. Hearing that someone had a good checkup at the cardiologist and they're doing well. As well as the struggles and the things that make us weep. Folks who go into the hospital, most of whom, I'm thankful to say, come out of the hospital and heal, but not everyone. The regular struggles of people who are uncertain in their faith or struggling with depression or other illnesses or oppressed by difficulties in relationships or discord with neighbors, losses of various kinds. All of these things have been opportunities to rejoice as well as to weep. And I'm thankful for all of that. The most sublime joy for me has been to be there when you all have taken another step closer to Christ. When I first came here, I said that that was how I saw my work as a pastor, not to stand way out in front of you and say, I know the way, I will lead you, go this way. We know it doesn't work that way with Quakers. Nor was my task to stand behind you and push in the right direction, because that generally doesn't work all that well with Quakers either, although sometimes. But rather, my task has been to walk alongside you, accompanying you in this journey, encouraging you to take the next step as God gives you the discernment. So it's been a great joy when someone said, yeah, I just finished reading through the Bible this year, and I learned all this stuff that I had never seen before. Or I've been meeting with this friend of mine and to do this spiritual discipline that we've discovered, and it's been so amazing. We've both grown so much closer to God and to one another as a result of that. Or when someone said, okay, I don't really know much about preaching, but I'll stand up here and say something on Sunday and we'll see how that goes. Or any one of the many other ways that each of you has drawn closer to God in the time that we've been here. It's been that I've been here. And Stephanie has been here. That's been the best. So on this day in particular, there is both weeping and rejoicing. Yes. It's sad to part ways. I am very sad to be leaving you. Sebastian just passed me in the hallway on his way out of the kitchen in the hour before worship and said, why do you have to leave? And I'm like, okay, how much time do you have? And of course, he's already running down the hall, so I didn't really have time. I'm not going to reiterate the reasons. But please be clear, I am not leaving because you have mistreated me or us. We are not leaving because this church is not a wonderful place to be. But God's call sometimes calls us elsewhere. And we will see each other again, one way or another. The most important thing about today, at least inside the walls of this community, is that it is a day for rejoicing, because we are welcoming 4 new members into fellowship today. One of them couldn't be here, but the other 3 are, and we're going to welcome the 4th sort of by proxy and then later as well. And that brings me back to this passage, or this chapter of Romans, the 12th chapter of Romans, a piece that we didn't read is earlier in the chapter, where Paul talks about the body of Christ and the way that the body is composed of different members, each of whom has different gifts, and that the practice of those gifts comes through the faith that each person has. So in the next couple of weeks, as Stephanie and I depart, we will be departing from this body, but there are 4 new members who bring different gifts from us. And over time, as you are discerning what God would have you do, who you are, and what your needs for leadership are in the next season of your life as a church, you will discern what new gifts you need someone to bring. And there's rejoicing in that as well. I know it's hard work. I know you would rather not do it. But there will be rejoicing in that work as well. Because the body is a whole composed of many members, each of whom has different gifts. Whatever sadness or rejoicing there is among us here in this circle, let's not forget the reality of the struggle outside our doors as well. In our community, even now, this very hour, and each day, as each of us struggles to be faithful to Christ. If there is anything to be learned from passages like this in Romans 12, it is that the test of the church, the test of our faith, the test of the way that we practice those gifts that God has given us is whether we are able to support one another in the things that God calls us to do in the world. Here we would do well to remember the second half of today's passage, a few things from that passage, where Paul echoes Jesus' words in the Sermon on the Mount, not verbatim, but very much in sentiment. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Respect what is right in the sight of all. If possible, so far as it depends upon you, be at peace with all people. This is the work of the church. This is the work of this church. You each have been called to it in various ways. And as you continue to rejoice with one another and weep with one another when there are seasons of joy or seasons of sadness, do not forget this work that we each have been called to, of being at peace with all so far as it depends upon us, shrinking from what is evil and seeking the good and seeking to love because of the goodness of God.